Chapter 12. It had just turned dark when Ron, bored with being at Wellmond again, started to walk home. He wanted to make sure that he was there in time to see The Hustler. It was his favorite movie, although The Ten Commandments, which he hadn't seen in some time, still got some billing on that list. He stared into the window fronts and thought about the streetlights that made him look good. When he reached the corner of Tremont Avenue, he studied the poster of an actress holding Steve McQueen's hands up to her tits. The picture and the location made him think of Cindy, who lived just up the street. They'd dated during the year after he graduated high school, and they'd fucked at least once a week. He used to love to bounce her tits on the palms of his hands. She'd said that she liked it when he squeezed them gently and sucked them hard. Thinking of her huge, creamy tits and red bush, he walked up her street. He wondered if she'd gone back to high school and stopped across the street from the driveway that ran alongside the apartment building she lived in. He pulled on his cigarette and stood there like a picture. He flipped the butt away, just like Sinatra would have done, and almost imagined a searchlight following him back down the street. As he turned the corner, he came face to face with two policemen who had been watching him from the other side of the corner store front window. Ron's eyes caught the flash of a long silver cylinder and was blinded by an explosion of light. "Hey," said Ron, bringing up his hands, trying to turn away.
"Where are you coming from?" said a voice the other side of the light.
"Wellmont Lane," said Ron. He felt himself being backed against a wall and held there with one arm. Two other hands patted down his chest, sides, and legs.
"Wellmont Lane's isn't up this street," said the cop, who clicked off his flashlight in time for Ron to see two patrol cars pulling up at the curb.
A tankish guy with a bald head, a short-sleeved shirt, and baggy pants with the flourish of a handkerchief sticking out of his rear pocket approached Ron with a swagger that made him look like rumbling machinery. The patrolman backed away a step as Detective Gavin L. stopped in front of Ron, who thought the guy was going to hit him.
"What's your name?"
"Ron Tuck. Can I ask what I did wrong?"
"You know what you did," said the tank. Detective Gavinell turned around to make sure that the other men were paying attention.
"Okay, you found him coming from up there?" He pointed up Cindy's street.
"What did he tell you?"
The voice from the back of the flashlight had blonde hair and a broken tooth.
"He lied. Said he was coming from Wellmont."
The tank turned its barrel mouth on Ron.
"You said you came from where?"
Ron looked past the tank and saw that a small crowd had gathered in twos and threes from nowhere and was staring at him. He heard a voice say, "Hey, Betty."
"Hi, Betty."
"I was walking home from Wellmont, and I took a little detour."
"Sure you did, kid."
The tank put his hand on Ron's shoulder and led him to the car.
"We're going to take you in, Ron," said Gavin L.
Rod slid into the back seat next to the flashlight holder, who smirked and showed his broken tooth. Ron felt dull and detached. "I'm in a squad car, and they're taking me in," he thought. He felt like he must have done something wrong. First, they would show him what it was. Then they would put him away for a long time. As they reached the police station, he thought, "This really could be the end of my life. I'll be out on the streets and probably die in some gutter when they're done with me." When they arrived, Ron was led into the sergeant's desk. The blonde guy left him standing there and went around side the desk through a swinging door. He stopped in front of a guy with a cigar in his mouth and gestured over his shoulder at Ron. Ron
stared back at them and fought the inclination to put his head down. The blonde guy came towards Ron and said, "Come with me." They walked slowly down a fluorescently lit corridor. Ron kept looking for a clock and wondering if the hustler had started yet. They entered a room that held a dozen large wooden work tables and a wall of file cabinets. Ron reached for his cigarettes, but found they'd disappeared among the confusion. "Are you guys going to tell me why I'm here?" "In a few minutes," said the broken tooth, who Ron noticed had a tattoo creeping down the edges of his shirt sleeve. "Can I make a phone call?" said Ron, in a voice that he was sure would get action. He was startled when the cop replied, "Not yet. I dropped my pack somewhere when you guys picked me up. Do you think I could have a cigarette?" The cop looked back at Ron quizzically. He reached into his pocket and drew out a pack along with his lighter his wife had given him for his birthday. He watched protectively as Ron used it and snapped it shut with a click, which was rougher than the treatment Patrolman Peters thought it deserved. The tank rolled into the room just as Ron was finished looking at the bulletin board full of messages that he couldn't quite read from where he sat. The tank was followed by a man in a blue uniform that Ron hadn't seen before. Gavinell stepped in front of Ron and leaned over the work table, saying, "Okay, Ron, you can make this a lot easier if you just tell me what happened." He had a sickly kind of scary look on his face. "Well, I was walking down the street, and you guys," he looked over at Patrolman Peters, "came along and grabbed me." He looked into the barrel of the tank as sincerely as he could. His voice was beginning to quaver. This wasn't like being told to move on and then getting caught standing on the same corner a few minutes later. He tried to remember what he'd done wrong and summoned up a courage that was born out of innocence and curiosity. "Why don't you tell me why I was brought here? What am I supposed to have done?" "Purse snatching," said Gavinell. He delivered the charge at Ron's face with a searching expression that would clue him as to the type of individual he was dealing with. Ron was in a state of semi-shock that could only be compared in his life to the way he felt when they told him they were going to operate on his left knee, or when they told him they were going to operate on his right knee, or when they told him that after the second operation that they found a tumor in his knee and that they were going to have to check for malignancy, or when they told him he was being thrown out of his first high school, or when he got caught stealing money from Marjorie's piggy bank and he was told that he was being taken to Boys Town. He was unable to do anything for at least 30 seconds. He wasn't dizzy, but everything seemed to blur in front of him. He tried to look at something he could grab hold of. Gavinell interpreted his silence for resignation, and even went so far as to add his traditional nod, something reserved for a private job well done that he learned to give himself because there was no one else gonna give it to him. He was disappointed when Ron mumbled, "I didn't take anybody's purse," in a rather believable way. Some of them held out longer than others, and some of them never admitted to the things they'd done, no matter the evidence. You could never really figure out how they were going to react. It was only a guess as to whether the evidence would put some sense into them as it was built up. "All right," said Gavinell, "you're not going to make this easy, are you? You're going to sit there and make us listen to your bullshit story about where you were, aren't you? I'm telling you right now, Ronnie, I'm not going to give you a break if you put me through a load of crap. Do you understand what I'm telling you, kid?" Ron shook his head yes, and then said, "But it's not crap. I didn't take anybody's purse." Okay, said Gavinel, throwing up his hands and gesturing to the guy in the blue jacket. This is Sergeant Brady. He's going to take your fingerprints and check them out to see if you have a record. Do you have a record, Ron? Ron immediately flashed back to the time when he lived in Newark. He was in sixth grade and had been caught with a butcher knife that he'd stolen from his mother's utility cabinet. He and his friends were going after some black kids because they had gone too fucking far this time. The war never came off because the cops got wind of it and showed up before anything happened. Even though they were Protestants, his mother had to put him in a Catholic school after that. Sergeant Brady led him over to another table. Ron wanted to yelp when Brady pressed his fingers onto the pad and across the paper, but he only looked up at the tank and waited to see what would happen to him next. Okay, began Gavinel in a tired and sarcastic voice. Where were you about 9 o'clock tonight? Can I make a telephone call and let someone know that I'm here? Asked Ron. Why do you want to do that? Gavinel was now more convinced of the suspect's guilt. He'd been in the station less than an hour, really hadn't been asked any questions, and he was already requesting counsel. Isn't it my right? The three cops in the room smiled at each other, and the broken-toothed one shifted one foot and relaxed. At least now he was starting to act like someone who'd gotten caught. You'll get all your rights, said Gavinel. Where were you at 9 p.m., is what I asked. I was probably at Wellmont Lanes or had just left. What were you doing there? I went to shoot some pool and see if any of my friends were around. Who did you meet? Nobody was really there, so I had a cup of coffee and played by myself for a while. Okay, okay, said Gavinel. He was impatient to get to the rest of it. When did you leave the bowling alley? I don't remember. Didn't you just say you left at 9 o'clock? Gavinel shook his head. He was sure that his instincts were correct. The kid would come around in no time, especially after they got the woman to identify him. Can I have another cigarette? Asked Ron. Peters didn't answer this time, nor did he appear particularly pleased when the tank swerved to him and said, Let's make sure our fearless purse grabber gets his rights. Give our boy a cigarette. He's a hero who grabs old ladies' purses in the dark. He deserves not to be deprived. Peters put his pack of cigarettes and the lighter on the table, a distance away from Ron. Ron looked down at the black-tipped fingers that made him look like a shoeshine boy. He held up his hands to show them he couldn't touch anything without smearing it. Gavinel tossed him a single butt and a pack of matches from his own pocket. Helpless as a baby, right? He said with a short, bitter laugh. The other cops looked at Ron like the word asshole was written on his forehead. A fourth cop came into the room and leaned down to say something near Gavinel's ear. The detective got up, pulled out his back pocket's handkerchief. He wiped his face and gestured to Patrolman Peters. Make sure Gorgeous George here doesn't burn himself trying to light his cigarette. He started for the door after the fourth cop. Ron wondered if this was when he was going to get hit. He'd heard stories about the room downstairs at this police station. When Gavinel was out of the room, Ron turned to Peters. Look, man, I didn't do anything. How do I get this guy to stop acting like I'm guilty? Peters didn't seem to want to answer, but eventually said, The detective is only doing his job. If you haven't done anything wrong, everything will work out okay for you. Ron didn't believe a word of it.
He had a panicky feeling that told him he was about to get screwed really badly. He got up and started to pace towards the door. Peters instinctively moved so that he was in front of Ron. It was how this kid didn't realize that his freedom had been taken away and that things were not going to stay this way until the matter was settled, and probably after that. Peters would show him exactly what that meant if he did anything stupid. Ron backed up and sat down in the chair again, but was unable to stop fidgeting. These fucking guys sucked, and they were about to make one of the most jerked-off moves of all time. He wanted to tell Peters how he knew the judge in his town, and he was going to make sure that they were the ones who got screwed for this. Too scared to say anything more, Ron formed his accusation in his mind and tried to write them on his face with his expression. Peters wasn't moving, and Ron wondered if they taught you to stand there and do nothing at policeman school. Peters probably thought there was no contradictions in his world. What a jerk-off. He's got it figured out so that things always come out even or in his favor, thought Ron. The door opened and Gavin L. rolled back into the room. Ron could have sworn that he made squeaky sounds when he walked. "Get up. Come over here," he ordered. "Stand in front of this mirror." Ron thought, "This is where I get belted." He felt very small, like there was a big hole in his pants. The mirror reminded him of a clothing store that he once worked in. He put his head down with shame at how innocent he'd been back then. "Look straight into the mirror," said the tank. "Stand up straight." After a few seconds, he barked, "Say something." "What should I say?" Ron turned to the tank like he was a friend who would help him in this time of need. Gavin L. nodded his head understandingly. "Say, if you scream, I'll kill you." Ron repeated what the detective had said. "Say it louder and meaner," said Gavin L., like he was firing a machine gun. Ron closed his eyes and bit his lip. He screamed out the line Gavin L. had given him. "Turn sideways," said the tank, who Ron now saw decidedly resembled a bulldog. He felt almost too weak to stand up anymore. "The other way," barked Gavin L. Ron showed the mirror his other side. He wanted to scream out, "Okay, you're right. I'm disgusting. I disgust myself too." He wanted to ask for another chance to straighten things out. A voice in his head said that only little kids get second chances, and that he should have known that they'd catch up with him sooner or later. "Sit down here," said Gavin L., placing a chair in front of the mirror and mumbling to Peters. "Keep him in the chair." Ron squeezed the bridge of his nose from his eye sockets. They left two black smudges under his eyes. Why had this happened to him? How the fuck could he ever explain this? He had just been on his way home, like any other fool who didn't have anywhere to go on a Friday night. Maybe that was why it had happened. Maybe it was because he didn't have places to go, like normal people. That was probably what all this was about. "Is there any place where I can get some water?" "Just sit there," said Peters. He turned and left the room. Ron was by himself for the first time in what seemed like hours. He let out a breath and cracked his knuckles. Peters didn't seem to be coming back. Ron got out of his chair and went to the door to see where his water was. Peters met him at the doorway with a 2-ounce Dixie cup in his hand. "Didn't I tell you not to get out of the chair?" he said, and raised a worried voice. "No," said Ron. "You told me to stay where I was. I haven't gone anywhere." Peters clenched his fist, and Ron moved back to the chair, draining the cup that teased his thirst. He stared at his own reflection. He could have sworn for a moment that he could make out the smallish figure of the tank and the silhouette of a dress in the mirror. They appeared to be inside of a camera. It wasn't until he realized that he was in front of a two-way mirror. He stiffened and looked down at his shoes. He did not look up at the mirror again. A long time passed. Ron did not ask for a cigarette or any more water. He ceased to search out the details of the muggy room. He was no longer interested in whether the hustler had started. The flesh and lines of his hands became increasingly interesting to them. He studied them intently as if he was tracing the route of a long, winding river. He dug at the creases of his knuckles like his nails were bulldozers, that he could just go on digging until he made some real progress, until he had done some real structural damage that even these punch press people would impress. He was happy when his hand began to bleed. He held the cut up to the corner of his mouth and gnawed at it like a merciless rodent. His lips got sticky from the blood. When the tank came back into the room, he swung his arms loosely. "Okay, Ron," he said cheerfully. "Everything checks out for you." Ron stared up at him. "What?" Gavinel immediately looked annoyed. "I said that everything checks out for you. You can leave, but watch yourself in the future." "What do you mean, I should watch myself in the future?" Ron was reviving quickly. He shoved his left hand back into his pocket. "What the hell did I do that I should watch myself about? Walking home? Is that what I did wrong?" "You wonder why people my age can't stand you." Gavinel was walking away, and Ron started following him. "I should tell you what I did and make things easy," he spit after the tank as he rumbled into the hallway. Patrolman Peters stood in front of the door. "Calm down before you get yourself in real trouble." "What did I do to get myself in trouble here?" shouted Ron. "Just relax," screamed Peters, a little louder than Ron had shouted. He held out his arm to keep the punk from running after the detective. If there was going to be trouble from this smart-ass punk, who was probably right for the first time in his life, Peters would love to deck him. Ron stared at the cop and shifted on his feet. In his gut, he wanted to race at the cocksucker and drive a nail into the broken tooth with his fist. What fucking right did these bastards have to put him in here and do this to him? Ron was led out of the room some 2 minutes later and escorted down the hall by Patrolman Peters, who stood him in front of Sergeant Brady. "They're spoiled. That's what's the matter with them. How do they think they'd make out in any other country in the world? For about 10 minutes they'd last," Brady shouted over to Gavinel. Ron saw him out of the corner of his eye and wanted to scream, "Fuck all of you," and drive the stapler on Brady's desk into the prick's eyes. He was certain that he could do damage before they got him. It seemed that everyone in the room was smirking at him. They'd gotten the best of him. He hit the door, saw the bus coming down the street, and ran to meet it. As he paid the fare, he wondered why they hadn't searched him. On top of being cops, which was bad enough, they'd been fucking stupid cops. He could hear the hum of the air conditioner as he approached his house. When he climbed the steps, he could make out the background noise of the television. He smiled at the familiarity. The apartment was dark always, except for the TV light. Ron walked over to the floor lamp and switched on the brightest light. Marjorie and George were temporarily blinded. "What's the matter with you? We're watching something," moaned Marjorie. George groaned, got out of his recliner, and headed for the bathroom.
"I was arrested tonight," Ron announced.
George stopped in his tracks, and Marjorie looked scared when she asked, "For what?"
"Purse snatching," said Ron, adding sarcastically, "I didn't do it."
George walked away, shaking his head, muttering. When he was safely in the bathroom, he reached into the hamper and pulled out a copy of The Kitten. He began to read from the place that he'd marked this morning. The kitten had just decided to help out this couple whose marriage had become dull. She was telling Mrs. Undy to open her legs and that she would do the same. Mr. Undy would play bunny rabbit. Mr. Undy had just gotten very excited when George heard Marjorie call, "Would you please come out here and call this police department that arrested Ronald?" George closed the book, put it back into the hamper, stared at the shower curtain, and got up wearily.